Class is now in session. And the UPS Store is here to help you ace arriving on campus. Our certified packing experts can pack everything you need, from desktops to decor. Plus, when you pack and ship with us, you get our exclusive pack and ship guarantee. Your items arrive safe or your money back. Restrictions and limitations apply. To get a 20% off packing coupon and for full details, visit theupsstore.com/packing.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the Post Wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
We just keep going. 40 minutes of news, getting everyone caught up from the passing of Eddie Hamilton, the Amazing Kung Fu, Seth Rollins' appearance on the Rich Eisen show, giving us an update and waiting, decoding exactly what it means. The best analysis in the game.
It is my favorite story in pro wrestling right now.
Way loves these stories, yeah. Yes.
As yeah. People as John does, too.
Oh, dude, people are writing my obituary, so I'm glad you're getting enjoyment out of it. We also have Bill Goldberg's pretty newsworthy interview on the Ariel Helwani show. we spent like 20 minutes on that.
A deep dive on this as well. This is the other really fun thing I love talking about right now in pro wrestling.
Yes. And then also going through the Saturday night's main event number from NBC, which, Bill Goldberg was very much a part of for that final quarter. The NXT number taking a big hit against the All-Star game, and a quick look at the G1 climax, because the climax begins Saturday and Sunday in Hokkaido. And tonight, Thursday night, midnight Eastern, is the deadline to get all of your picks in for the annual post-wrestling G1 Climax Picks Contest. You have to make your predictions for every match, picking out who is going to win this thing and how, and it's free to enter. Go to postwrestling.com/G1. You've got to, the time is of the essence to get all of your picks in. The deadline, again, Thursday night at midnight. No cost to enter this. You can be the king of post-wrestling this summer.
Not only do you get bragging rights, but we are also giving away free subscriptions to the Post Wrestling Cafe for the top three winners. So, even if you are currently a Post Wrestling Cafe member, you can use a voucher essentially anytime you want to extend your membership. So sign on, completely free to enter, and just join the fun. It makes the G1 way more interesting.
And if you want a cheat sheet, Thursday at noon Eastern, on all of our feeds, I'm going to be dropping our G1 preview show. Myself and Bruce Lord are going to go through all of the participants. We will make our arguments for what makes the most sense, who has the most to gain, who could be in dire straits with a poor showing in this tournament. We will be going through all of it, all 20 participants, how Tanahashi should be handled in this tournament, who are the ones to watch, big matches coming up, all of that and more, with Bruce Lord dropping Thursday noon Eastern time. But wait, my post-wrestling notifications have been going off the hook over the last 2 days. We've got a great edition of DCU Later with Rich Van and WH Park going through Superman. Spoiler review. No complaints allowed.
It says right there on the thumbnail. Yeah, the first ever edition of DCU Later. I feel like at some point in time, WH might have sworn that he would never, ever, ever do a DCU review or DC review. Well, the time has come where that rule had to be broken.
He was called upon.
Yes, he was. This was a movie so big, even John Pollock went out on opening weekend to watch, okay? So here are their thoughts. Rich and WH go through the entire thing. I've got tickets myself to watch on Friday, so I'm kind of excited for it.
All right. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on the film. It seems to be all over the place.
I saw a wild WH Park at the mall today.
No
unexpectedly.
Way.
Yeah.
No, I was there I with, hung out with him yesterday.
I thought that was crazy. Yeah. I was there with a friend and he happened to be strolling around before work. So I was like, what are you doing here? I was just listening to your podcast.
Wow. Well, great. There you go. The man is out and about.
He's everywhere.
This is his city. Okay. He's the mayor of Toronto. Yes. Also, a really great addition of the internet darling at Post Wrestling, The Wellness Policy. Jordan Goodman, Neil Flanagan, dropping F-bombs along with Wei Ting, looking at the Players Tribune pieces on both Charlotte Flair and the documentary they produced on the Briscoe family. I'm about halfway through the show. I've heard all the stuff on Ashley so far, and I'm up to the Briscoe portion. So a really great topic this month, I think. Very relevant one since we have just spoken about these.
As always, I want to thank you for actually taking the time out of your busy schedule. You always make time for The Wellness Policy, and it's appreciated from all of us. But I thought it was a lot of fun to just, like, we've spoken about these both of these pieces on these shows before in like maybe 10-minute chunks. But it was really nice to get into a bit of a deeper dive onto like everything covered in these articles, from like, you know, Ashley Flair, Charlotte Flair talking about her confidence issues, to like, you know, the Tiffany Stratton promo segment that brought up her divorce, and just how weird it is that in professional wrestling, it is kind of like your job to have these things brought up in the interest of creating tension for a storyline that you're there to promote. Anyway, so a lot of interesting things covered for two pieces that I kind of feel are relevant enough to be like, to have had some sort of effect on both of their in-ring, in-storyline characters. In the case of Charlotte Flair getting cheered, potentially largely affected by this article. And in the case of Mark Briscoe, kind of feels like this Player Tribune documentary is almost required viewing for his character evolution going forward.
Yeah, I mean, as we said last week, both come highly recommended to check out. And I thought you guys did a really great kind of commentary about going into a lot of the talking points, because they were especially on the Charlotte side of things. Like, it brought up a lot of interesting subjects of what a female performer navigates in this industry. And I think there was also added emphasis on this after that study came out last week about just, you know, putting into context just the
most harassed professional athletes.
Yeah. I mean,
top the list for wrestlers. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. All of that can be found postwrestling.com and postwrestlingcafe.com. Last plug we'll put in is that if you sign up on Thursday, you get 30 days access, and that will carry you to the end of the G1. So $6 gets you in the door. It doesn't get you just the G1 podcast, but also the XL editions, which gives you live access to Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, which come with the news of the week at the beginning of the show, Rewind to Ways, and Thursday, the Ask Away Mailbag Show, where we are going to be taking all of your questions, which you can post in the thread at forum.postwrestling.com. And this weekend, a UFC 318 review with Eric Marcotte and Jack Wannon. And then Sunday night, Jack Wannon is going to join me for TNA Slammiversary. So we've got a packed weekend between all of that, G1, and the cherry on top, the NWA podcast Sunday night.
Fantastic. As always, if you don't, for whatever reason, want to pay $6 a month to get everything, you can get all of these exclusive podcasts for $3 each a la carte, if that's what you prefer.
We're fine. We don't have to go steady. You know what? If you're just looking for a one night stand,
take a stand.
Post wrestling is where you do it.
Yes, exactly.
Tonight we go to the Aragon Ballroom, the nearly 100-year-old venue. Way did it take you 5 seconds or 4 seconds to say, this is a great venue to book wrestling at?
Like half a second, you know, just from, I actually saw a still of from like a preview of somebody entering the arena, and immediately it's got character. It looks completely unique from any of the other places. Like, you'd be able to identify this just in a shot, you know, versus any other arena. And I love venues like this. You know?
I think in this day and age where so many like just regular sports arenas just blend into each other, I think anytime you can get, number one, it's like, you know, AEW, we had said for the longest time, like finding some of these smaller venues, the crowds sound great. And if they look cool on TV, I think that goes a long way. And, you know, they had 1,144, which was listed as a sellout for this venue. So this is a very small venue that AEW is running. One of the smallest they've probably ever run for a Dynamite, but it looked great. It sounded great. And they're here for 6 nights. So they'll go back Thursday night for Collision, and then they're here for the next 2 weeks.
Okay. Interesting. I say interesting just because, at least Wikipedia lists the capacity is 5,000. Now, I don't know what it is exactly just for the ballroom itself. Could, anyway, so listen,
then maybe it was probably then set up for 1144. So that right. is the difference. But I mean, I was just watching this. I didn't even, they must have, constructed this,
it looks
strategically.
Full.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, I don't know where you would put 5,000 people here.
Well, I would say, do you think, I think that's a great venue for like any point in the year, but for the show coming off of All In, it like, do you think that they would have done better at a bigger space or no, if this is what the demand was?
I didn't think necessarily. I mean, it's one of the things in that I don't know if we're going to see like what kind of momentum they have coming out of this show. Like they're running like a pretty conservative sized venue here in Chicago. I think it's much more important for them to sort of maintain a really strong atmosphere that because I don't think they're just going to turn a page and suddenly they're drawing 7,000 people. Like, I just don't think AEW is at that state right now. They had a great, great win over the weekend, but it was one where, you know, it still has not seen this massive consistency in terms of like what they've been able to draw week to week on television. So I don't know if I would have been that ambitious, booking somewhere that was like a 9,000 seater or something like that.
I'm just doing some quick research while you're talking. I'm seeing standing room capacity could be up to 4,500 people for seated events, 1,800, which might be more in line with
okay.
today's
and
number.
Maybe they scaled it for like around 1,200 is maybe what they had. But it's like just following it, it's not like these shows, even at that scale, were like an instant sellout either. I mean, these mm-hmm. have kind of all been in like the high hundreds or so going in. So, you know, they have to draw for 6 nights here, and you're pretty yeah. much going to be drawing from a lot of the same people over that time.
Mm-hmm.
How many shows would you have gone to for the mythical Toronto residency? I think the answer would be zero.
Maybe the first one, yeah.
Tony Schiavone is in the ring. He brings out Hangman Page, who comes out to a thunderous reaction, wearing the belt. I really did underestimate how much this revealing of the belt was going to be like a big thing. And just seeing the title, it does feel very important just that you're seeing this title. It was something that like I didn't give any thought to. And then, you know, they got something out of this for sure.
I think it's a bit of a sort of like visual statement, you know, a way to maybe just visually represent a different era, you know, like essentially the briefcase was just the, like Mox's version of like a spray painted NWO championship, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or like Daniel Bryan's Planets championship, and Hangman restoring the original is just like, you know, the good guys have saved the universe sort of thing.
So he's limping on his way out, surviving this war with Jon Moxley. And the fans chant, "You deserve it." And Page says, "No, you deserve it. Because you supported a grassroots DIY approach to wrestling. We started a revolution, and you're the reason that we're here." And the whole place starts chanting AEW. He says, "We don't do all of this for titles. We do it for you, the fans. You deserve to see this title, and I have more gratitude for you people than you'll ever know. And I fought in a war, but some of the people that fought in these battles didn't come out the same. And so I want to thank people like Orange Cassidy, Jay White, Adam Copeland, The Ops, Danielson, Darby, Will Ospreay." And he pauses, and they're all chanting, "Whose house?" And he says, "I don't know if he helped just for himself, for AEW, or for a second decided to help me, but I thank you, Swerve." And the crowd cheers this. He admits, "I did shed some tears over the last week. Jon Moxley might think that makes me weak or less of a man, but I've got a wife and two kids that love me and millions of fans that respect me. And tonight I stand here, the champion of the fucking world."
Mm-hmm.
What a promo from this
guy. Great coronation speech from this guy. And like, And, you know, like in a moment like this, I think we can think about maybe how Paige got here. And I just think, like, maybe just even listening to him and watching him, I wouldn't necessarily say he's the best promo in the company. Would you?
The best? He is.
On pure skill.
Oh, like, in terms of just straight delivery, he's got, like, though, a sincerity and realness that I would put, like, absolutely top level. But is he the guy that, you know, you say, hey, you're going to hear from Eddie Kingston tonight, and you're excited for that segment? Hangman maybe doesn't elicit that in terms of just a speaker, but
right. But I completely agree with everything else you said in that, like, he is the clear choice to be the representative of this company. And I'm trying to think why. And I guess, you know, like, ultimately in pro wrestling, you don't have to be the best at really any singular thing. You have to be good enough, you know, in probably everything. But more importantly, you have to have some sort of story behind you, and you have to have that connection with the crowd. And through whatever this man has been able to achieve in his career, that connection has been established. It's been very well established. And this is really like him finally realizing the potential that I think, you know, we wanted to see from him from the very beginning of AEW. Very, very good speech. Just like just the type of like confirmation that I think you wanted from, you know, a post victory celebration. Yeah.
And he then, you know, he exits the ring, and they note that he will be in action later tonight in the main event. There was a video for All in Texas with highlights, and just a chance for Wade to hear one more time. Breathe in. Breathe out.
Until next year.
One more play out of a machine head. And then we have so this video just featuring all these stats of their highest attended North American event, social media stats. They had one in here that read largest gate in AEW history. Now, I was told by AEW, because I did inquire about this. I asked if they hit the 3 million mark, and I was told, yes, it did hit 3 million. This was not, though, the biggest gate in AEW history. I think they meant largest North American gate, because this, like, that first Wembley show did $10 million. This last year's Wembley, I don't think we ever got a final gate number, but it too would have been ahead of it. So this would have been their largest North American gate. But the biggest stat, 2,151 pyrotechnics fired. How many did you count?
I lost count, maybe, you know, 1,285. Sure. Yeah. A lot of money was spent, you know. I found that to be maybe more of the amusing stat. I thought these stats were maybe going to get more and more creative and more ridiculous, you know. 10,487 plastic cups used. Whatever. However many decibels, in crowd noise, totaling. I mean,
all joking aside, AEW, when you put on a show like this, this is stuff you have to do.
Of course.
I would have just carpet bombed people's inboxes with press releases on Monday, like touting the, like, listen, it's a verifiable stat. They did a bigger gate than the Katie Taylor Amanda Serrano fight on Friday at Madison Square Garden, which was a massive event in New York City and on Netflix. Like, when you have a win like this for AEW, they have to make the loudest noise possible when they do this type of thing, like a $3 million gate, 25,000 plus fans. And, like, you know, you take enough of your lumps publicly. When you have your successes, like, you've got to scream to the mountaintop of these wins. So I was glad that they put together a video like this. And throughout this show, like we've talked about, like, tonight's Dynamite was, I wouldn't say like the Dynamite of the year, but they certainly made it feel like Sunday was the show of the year if you missed it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the sort of post-event work of the promotion does not end once the event is over. You have to promote how great the event was in order to, I think, really fully realize the benefit, really fully realize the gains out of your workout. It's like, you know, John, you know this. You've been lifting weights here. Like, you want to stretch, okay, after your workout. Maybe take an ice bath, you know, to limit that lactic acid. in order to fully recover so that you can come back the next time even stronger.
You don't want to give yourself a stroke.
No, you don't want a migraine.
Yeah. This is great for the free listeners that don't people. Get any of this.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego Chicken Sandwich, Fuego Fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego Chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty Classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego Chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
The Young Bucks arrive in an Uber, and they did some vignettes with them having to go to their new decrepit locker room, no longer as EVPs. Kyle Fletcher, Máscara Dorada was our first match. Very fun match between these two. So we see Dorada with a double springboard missile dropkick off the post and rope, then a tornillo dive to the floor, spinning Ron off the top, sends Fletcher off, and then hits a 450 onto Fletcher for a two count. The moonsault gets caught, and Fletcher lawn darts him into the corner, running boot, and the brainbuster for the win in 10 minutes and 52 seconds. Fletcher then crawls toward the camera and says, "It is my life's mission to take everything from Dustin Rhodes." And he was literally salivating at this as he drooled all over the mat, telling Dustin that he is coming for everything in the man's life.
Oh, the spit, the saliva was a great touch. And I don't know if it was like something intentional, but it worked really, really well to make him just look.
I don't think this was in his back pocket. He's like, you know what? Tonight's the night I drool.
You know, some guys, you don't know these wrestlers, okay? They're creating new skills.
You're
every
suspicious
day.
Maybe, of everyone this week.
Maybe saliva is something that is, you know, something that is being worked on, okay, for a lot of these guys. But like, I think as we suspected, okay, he could have won the TNT championship after Adam Cole, you know, was injured. But then where do you go? I'm sure like there'd be a more interesting feud. But seeing Kyle Fletcher now,
this guy would be so hated if he beats him, Dustin, after this little nostalgia run that Dustin gets.
And to see now a Kyle Fletcher that is rabid and that is pissed off, I think is so much better for his character. So I'm glad they started the show off with him.
The Young Bucks are seen dragging their luggage. Renee is having her enjoyment out of watching the Young Bucks have to reduce themselves. Marina Shafir just ignores the Bucks walking by, and there's a production guy crossing out EVPs on their dressing room. Ricochet and the Gates of Agony walk by, laughing at them, and then Don Callis calls this whole thing ridiculous that they're no longer EVPs after just losing one match. He said, "Maybe we can do some business now that Kenny's dead, and the Bucks will never join the Don Callis family," but he does have a point. They hug, and they are all, well, the Bucks will be teaming with members of the Don Callis family tonight.
Mm. Mm.
A lot to process here. The Hurt Syndicate were
like,
interviewed.
Why do they have their own locker room?
It's probably
Max too, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's in their contract.
I mean, I think it would have also been fun to see them actually go into the general locker room and them having like a cubby that's like smaller than, I don't know, Dante Martin's or something. You know.
Yeah, they could have done maybe a little more with this, but I don't know how much the Aragon Ballroom was.
Yeah, I don't know if they have such a big dressing room. You're right.
We got an interview with the Hurt Syndicate that was done after All In. The MVP knew they would retain the tag titles. We've not even been threatened yet. We're begging for a tag team to step up and take our titles. And This is when Bobby Lashley also stated that, you know, when they bashed my knee three times last week with a chair, I'm not a doctor. I know my body. And my knee was totally fine right afterwards.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
During the match.
Yeah. That was nothing. That was a nothing angle last week.
What the hell was the point of that?
I don't know. There was no point to it.
Is to keep him down for like 2 minutes, I guess?
There was three chair shots to the knee last week.
Yeah. Jeez. Okay.
He recovered well. MJF then takes over. He's happy that Hangman won because he has something to prove to him. He knows that I am the best and I'm going to beat you clean in the middle. And then this contract is simply a break glass in case of emergency option. So you got the sense that he's going to just try and go after Hangman and not even need to use this contract unless he has to. And sure. I am the physical embodiment of your depression. And he will push him over the edge of his own despair because nice guys finish last.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Okay, so let's say like he earns his title shot some other way, whether it be, I don't know, winning a tournament or something like that, and still has the contract in his back pocket.
Seems like a lot of work.
Well, he really wants to make sure he wins, right? Have we ever seen somebody like lose
what happened,
a match?
Wouldn't you be going into the first match with the idea that, well, I'm probably not going to win this? Like, if you won, like the contract's a waste.
Okay, but you're still champion, so who cares, right? You know,
yes. Yeah.
And if you lose the title before whenever it expires, you could still use it again, right?
You but could in be the champion with the contract. Oh my goodness. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Well, in the case of Max, like I could see a scenario where he actually earns a title shot, has the wrestling match, loses the match, and then decides to cash in at the end of it and win. I don't know if we've ever seen that sort of scenario. At this point, we're kind of looking for like new creative ways of using this Money in the Bank deal, aren't we?
Next was our fun 8-man tag of the week. The Young Bucks, Josh Alexander and Hechicero against Jet Speed, Bandido and Brody King. I really like that they did go out of their way to show highlights of the Bandido Takeshita match from Supercard of Honor. They made that feel like, hey, this was a great match that happened over the weekend and it was certainly worth your time to check out. Man, Nick Jackson did, he did this combo. He super kicks Kevin Knight off the shoulders of Josh Alexander on the floor. Then he leaps to the top into the stomp powerbomb combo with Matt to Speedball and then finishes with a dive to the floor. Just all seamless as they continue here. The Bucks then call for the EVP trigger to Kevin Knight, but realize they can't call it that any longer, and they're just caught off guard, and Knight is able to land a double dropkick and tags in Speedball. Brody would come in, hits a big tope suicida, Bandido with a top rope moonsault to the floor, and then Bailey hits a poison rana onto Alexander, eats a pair of double super kicks from the Bucks, then Knight springboards into double super kicks, and it's Bandido pressing Nick in the air for a cutter, then the X knee, but the 21-plex is stopped by Alexander. They manage an indie taker to Bandido. Hechicero pops Bandido up in the air for one final set of super kicks from the Bucks, and then he lands in the rear naked choke as Bandido goes out to Hechicero in 13 minutes and 36 seconds. It was also when they showed the highlight that after Bandido retained the ROH title, it was Hechicero issuing the next challenge. So obviously that ROH title match is coming probably pretty soon. I don't see them holding that off till their September pay-per-view.
Forbidden Door, maybe?
So their next the next ROH special is 1 week after Forbidden Door. I don't know if they're going to wait that long for this one. This one feels like they're going to be doing it more imminent. Maybe I could see them doing this on one of these Chicago dates, even like that, soon, which is fine. Like this should not be taking place on some ROH show. And it's too far for their next special.
I think all of these guys are amazing on their own, but seeing the Bucks added to like this group, like this whole Don Callis versus like, you know, your baby faces type of thing is, it just supercharges these type of multi-man matches to just a different level of creativity and speed. I thought this was so great. Really well laid out, starting off with these individual pairings. Then you're relying on baby faces fighting off the two-on-ones, and then all leading to that incredibly well-coordinated and exciting finish made everybody look so strong here.
How do you feel Jet Speed has come out of this this tag title program?
Awfully. Terrible. Yeah. I just don't. I think they were always going to have a challenge, you know, as a tag team to be taken seriously anyway, because neither of them are really sort of like big personalities known for being great speakers. They're both somewhat undersized. And I think the feud just completely, they never really got any sort of redemption from it. Unless you count stealing
The tag title belts with the whiteboard warning.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless you count that. But they come out of this, I think, just looking like bigger geeks and therefore like sort of your next version of a Top Flight. You know, you, exciting tag team. Love watching them, but not to be taken seriously as any sort of title contenders.
Adam Copeland came out. The fans kept singing his theme, and he clarifies, I did not come down at all in to save Christian. He's an asshole. And he goes over all the reasons why Christian is such. He goes over their history, what he's done to them. Cage could not let Cope win the AEW title before he did. And I don't even blame Nick Wayne for doing what he did to Christian. He hopes that Christian can pull his head out of his ass. The reason I came back was to get my hands on FTR. He said, I was cleared 5 years ago, and who were the first people I called to get into shape? It was FTR. We even talked about becoming rated FTR and winning the Trios titles while we were in another company, which is a hell of a dream to have in a company that has never had Trios titles. So this was quite the hope of
AEW Trios titles?
Not until 2022. So unless this man was seeing into the future, maybe they were going to go to Mexico together, all of them.
Maybe
they were going to win the never six-man titles.
That's it, yeah.
So he says, now we were all in AEW, we could actually do that. But he called FTR megalomaniacs who blame everyone except themselves. He said, you took 4 months away from me. Almost as many months as the Toronto Maple Leafs took from their hometown.
Oh, come on. We're in the off season. How dare you?
I stole that joke from somebody. He says that might not sound like a lot of time, 4 months, but I've been doing this for 33 years, and 4 months is time I don't have. And man, this was neck and neck with Bill Goldberg's, this is not 1999 anymore. When he said 33 years, I'm like, man, that's a long time. That's a long time.
I've had a lot of those moments. Yes. And I keep having more of those. Yeah.
I mean, he says, I came back.
That's 13 years from Nick Wayne being born.
Yeah, that's very early in life. He has come back to AEW to end FTR and to answer. Out comes Big Stoke with his security, and it is the return of Kevin Koo's security.
You know, he must be running quite the side business for himself. I had no idea. Security,
it's a great gig if you can manage it. Stoke is getting a ton of heat here. He says that FTR read Cope like a book, and he makes fun of his entrance. You come out here, you'll go left, you'll go right, and then you'll cost someone their salary for the amount your pyro cost, which is probably a good portion of that statistic. And then he talks about Cope's weapon, Spike, that is a liability. And he said that Tony Khan received 3 anonymous emails about Cope's behavior and warns Cope that if you interfere or touch FTR or even come near them, you will be fired because FTR are focused on going for the tag titles. Cope then ends the segment calling him an Oompa Loompa, attacks security, and spears Stoke for the big pop at the end of this segment. So let us rewind. Because of Cope's run-in, Stoke is basically admitting that he spammed Tony Khan's email complaining about this guy.
He and FTR is the presumption, being the three.
Okay, yeah. So that is there. He is laying this out. I mean, that this was our scheme.
We sent,
and now Tony
email.
Khan has so bought into this that Tony Khan is going to fire this guy if he touches FTR. The same guy that just watched one of his prized wrestlers just land on a bed of nails. He's going to fire this guy for touching.
Well, you know, Tony is now very sensitive to, I imagine, like backstage incidents involving physicality.
Okay.
So
I guess so.
No, this stip is kind of hard to believe. I think it would have been easier to believe if somebody like the Bucks were in charge and you had like a heel GM who'd be willing to stack the odds this way. But just based off of like a wrestling angle to
put like Tony Khan should not be the one who's getting outsmarted by Stokely Hathaway and FTR into potentially. I actually like the setup here that Copeland cannot get his hands on FTR. He said, we are focused on the tag team titles. Therefore, the only way Cope can get his hands on them is to find a tag partner and enter the tag division. And that can lead to Christian at some point when they get there. But this, to me, just this one made no sense that this guy's job is on the line if he touches FTR.
Yeah, maybe if the angle was like violent enough, or like if it took place like in a backstage setting or like somewhere that where this sort of thing should not never happen, maybe like it would justify Tony making this sort of
how stick. Violent could this have been following the Texas death match? Like what would he have had to do? Like,
well, it would have had to take
a firearm
place.
On a
it
FTR?
Would have had to take place in gorilla position next to Tony Khan's table. And it would have
just,
to have been
he
caught
just leaps
on camera.
Off camera as Chris Hero is just, oh man.
That's it. That's exactly it. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Let's not rerun that footage. No, that would probably be the worst idea possible. Yeah. I wasn't a big fan of this setup. I like where it's going, but not the setup at all. I think they could have got there a lot better than they opted to.
I really like Cope's promo. I continue to think he's been really great at just delivering clear storytelling in all of his appearances. Here he came out and I think patched some of the logic gaps that we might have had in him just all of a sudden coming out and saving Christian after all Christian did to him. He explained that he was not here to save Christian. He was here to stop FTR. And it gave us a great recap of his history with FTR so far. And explained his current mission, I think, with a lot of fire. So I thought Cope did a great job.
Yeah, it was this segment with Cope and coupled with the Hangman open. So it's like we've got now our top clear-cut number one babyface, but we add, you know, Copeland's in this mix here. He's not like the top babyface, but he's in there. And when you add Hangman, list off Will Ospreay, Darby Allin, Swerve, even like, you know, members of the ops and stuff. It's like, dude, they have so many baby faces now. Like True. We used to talk about like, you know, trying to get like those big baby faces up. And I just look on the heel side and it's like top heels. It's like, it's Moxley, it's MJF, but there's certainly an opening for somebody to turn at some point and join that mix. Because well, they're really heavy on baby faces.
This is a very good problem to have. I think it's a lot easier to make a heel than it is a baby face.
It is.
They have a lot of people that the audience is connected to and that the audience loves. And any of those guys can turn and they will be a hot baby face tomorrow.
And I'd say like Hangman, Swerve, Ospreay, I would not be touching those three.
Yeah.
I think those are very important baby face figures to have. Mark Briscoe, another excellent baby face. I would not be turning this guy either. Another great promo from him. He basically says, if it talks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's a duck. And if it talks like a bitch and acts like a bitch, well, MJF, you're a bitch. And you ducked and avoided me in the casino gauntlet. I didn't get to whip your ass and I didn't get to win, which is what I set out to do. He says, MJF, you invoked my brother's name and you also invoked his spirit out of me. And I'm going to make you pay for your sins. Like just another solid promo from this guy who just feels like they certainly have something special with him at the moment.
They're bringing the two out of the two and one here. We're seeing his alter ego, his big brother is about to show up. I love that we are. I think they're making a real effort into giving us a more serious side of Mark Briscoe here. This didn't have word of the day. This wasn't even like a big rambling promo done to make us laugh or anything like that. This was serious Mark Briscoe, which I think we got on Collision and we're getting here. Through MJF, MJF is allowing him to find that fire so that I think that's kind of what we need to in order to see him as maybe a championship level contender, you know, rather than just maybe somebody who's there to make us laugh in the mid card. So I was curious to see how like what this actually meant. The spirit of Jay Briscoe would be coming through him. Like I was curious to see how that would turn out in his matches. In watching the match, I don't know if I really saw any sort of difference in his wrestling. Like, I don't know if I necessarily saw more violence out of him. He's already kind of violent anyway, right? But I like the idea. I would have loved to have seen it translated a bit more in the in-ring. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chalk-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Well, we had $100,000 up for grabs in our four-way match between Willow Nightingale, Chris Statlander, Tekla, and Queen Aminata. Did you see what Queen Aminata was going to do if she had won the match with the $100,000?
I saw Statlander's. I didn't see Aminata. Did I?
Aminata quote tweeted this announcement that the $100,000, all of it, would go to an anti-ice fundraiser.
Oh my God. I thought they were going to, they might turn her heel, not after something like that.
No. She was, yeah.
Well, Chris Statlander said, I'm going to buy $10,000 worth of worms to release into the men's locker room, $20,000 to my bad bitches, $30,000 to the local animal shelters, and $40,000 in the pockets of Stat Daddy. All right.
I thought at the end she'd be like, Anna, and then I'm going to invest in a GIC.
Well, that's what the $40,000 might be. I would hope at least a portion of the $40,000. I love these like just random matches for like a random amount of money. Like,
yeah,
it allows you to have fun and it allows you to just maybe believe that these.
I don't want them to bring back rankings, but I do want like the graphic when they come out of like their AEW net worth, so yeah, that we can keep track of these.
How
like,
much money is
six
in
figure
bank,
wins
bank account? Yeah, yes. What's their portfolio at present? I'd love that.
So, this is the second match in a row that Queen Aminata has done the chocolate kisses, where it's not been called the chocolate kisses. It was just the one time they referred to this as chocolate kisses. So I'm wondering if they're not calling it that anymore, but I'm going to. So that's the name of it. Willow decided to get inspiration from a Raw on Monday as she hit the old school rack attack onto Tekla here, which we did get the explanation from Nikki Bella.
Yeah. Would you care to explain why Nikki?
She was on the Raw recap and said it was just her natural, like she just naturally went for the old rack attack and then suddenly realized, and then I don't know if it was like Chelsea like was trying to turn herself around, but Nikki was just naturally going for the original rack attack, which she was like, I'm glad that it got basically messed up because I have not hit that move since I broke my neck and probably should not be hitting that maneuver.
Yeah, the original rack attack starts from a torture rack position.
Like yeah, and then just she would go down to the knees and with the opponent on her shoulders.
The new rack attack is a TKO, which starts from a regular fireman's carry, not inverted. So that was a screw up.
So Tekla does a spider suplex onto Aminata and then eyes Chris from the spider walk position. All four of them go back and forth with strikes. They go down. The crowd's on their feet. Babe with the powerbomb is hit onto Tekla when Statlander yanks Aubrey out of the ring. Willow and Chris then fight up the ramp, leaving Queen Aminata to deliver a double stomp on Tekla when Sky Blue shows up, distracting her, and Julia Hart enters the ring with the mist to Aminata's eyes. Tekla gets the win with a stomp in 10:43 as they continue this movement towards an allegiance between Julia Hart and Tekla.
Yeah,
and now Tekla is decked out with $100,000. Maybe next time she's at a bar late at night, she can spot Davey Portman a drink.
Maybe, yeah. This would be really confusing for people who.
You got to follow the whole universe, okay? This is like you got to watch all the programming to get all of our jokes, okay? I could have explained all this in German, and then people would have been really confused about Tekla.
What were they drinking? Yoo-hoo yeehaws? Is that what they were drinking? Check out the Poison Rana Patreon, everybody. They had some great road diaries on their trip to All In, including an interesting encounter between Tekla and
running with Tekla and was it Megan Bain?
And Joey Janela apparently.
And Joey Janela, that's
they were
right
there too. Yeah. Anyway, I enjoyed this match. I think that, like, this crop of like the women in the mid card, like they've been pretty consistent about featuring them. Oftentimes in the same match that we're seeing over and over and over, but nonetheless, we're getting a lot of ring time from all of them, and I think they're establishing their presences really well. In particular, Tekla and Queen Aminata, who like are both. I mean, Aminata's been around, but I would consider her like a recent project as a result of everything, right? And they've done a good job of establishing them all. I would love to see more, like. I think some personality stuff at this point, you know, in ring, they're definitely delivering. Now I think we're getting a little bit of story with Tekla joining up forces with Julia Hart and Sky Blue. I think they're still going to, I find it interesting studying Tekla because everything she does is such a baby face thing. Like every move she does, she's like slapping hands with like the crowd and all that. But now she's teamed up with a heel group in Julia Hart and Sky Blue. So how much of that ultimately matters in modern wrestling, I don't know. But I'm curious to see how they navigate that.
Timeless Toni Storm, who this Aragon Ballroom was built for a century ago. She shows up in one of the boxes. And I mean, just the visual of this, if you did not see it, like they...
Incredible.
So it's like it's in black and white, but you've got the red of not just Toni Storm, but all the people in the crowd too, that had like, this scene looked amazing. She shows up and calls herself, this is always my favorite part that I've got to recap, the bitch you want to itch, the skank you want to spank, the trollop you cannot wallop, this tramp is the champ. And she thanks Mercedes.
She's done the same roll call before. This is kind of her thing.
Yeah, she's kind of going, you know, full John Cena here. The tramp is here. She thanks Mercedes for going all in, warned her that if you made a mistake, I was going to eat you alive, and you were delicious. She says, if you want to come back for seconds, this buffet is always open. And then states that Luther was injured and needs reattachment surgery. And this, she actually showed up at an indie show in Portland and announced. She did state that the man broke his penis at All In. So we are just running with that.
What was the spot?
I don't know. I did not have broken dick on my notes from Saturday. I'll go back and double check, but I don't think that was in there. Now, is this a real injury?
You know, we'll have to replay the footage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Luther will be on Rich Eisen.
Yeah, maybe he'll be co-hosting. Yeah, is he going to Birmingham? Well, we'll check the MRIs.
It's too swollen to.
Oh,
sorry. She says now, Jesus Christ! Now her tits are pointing to the future. So the crowd starts chanting tits. She says her belt is the big one, and she is interrupted on screen by Athena and Billy Starks, who state that soon Athena will be the forever AEW Women's Champion, and that not only is Luther injured, but so is Mina Shirakawa, who injured her hand from the O-face, and no one is left to save you, Tony. And she shows off her contract for the title match and says, your demise and your murder are here. Seems a little bit much, but nonetheless, she's coming.
I mean,
coming.
In her world, like, I guess murder is possible. You know, we know Mirai has been compromised to a permanent end. Murder is possible in the Tonyverse, I think.
Yes. Tony, yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, Tony just ended. Let's make sure I get in all of this. That,
please.
To Athena, if you're sweaty, I'm ready. If you are willing, I will be thrilling. And if you are able, I will bend you over the table. And Toni Storm will take on Billy Starks next Wednesday. And next time, maybe Wei will handle the Toni Storm.
I think
we should be equal partners here.
I thought you did a great job, almost as as Miss Storm here herself. I mean, geez.
It's a great segment. Felt like, you know, this. She really does feel like her and Hangman feel like the biggest stars in a company that has a number of them. But it's like, man, she is just a superstar in this company.
She honestly is amazing. Like these sort of promos. Are just incredible. Like and it's not just in the writing. The writing is incredible. The delivery is just perfect, and she does it so like naturally. Again, like these are the types of like things that I think we'll have far more appreciation for once you know, her career is done, which hopefully is many, many years from now. But just so, so good. And like, I think a lot of us, or I was expecting Monet to win. And I think that would have been a completely fine decision, logical decision. But, man, Toni is just hot right now. They're both hot. They're both. But, like, Toni is just, like,
Well, they clearly set up like there will be a rematch, and you're going to have Toni Storm and Athena as well at some point as well. So it's not like it's directionless by any stretch. And I think they should hold off on the Mercedes rematch and make this feel like make it a really big deal when they have the rematch. Like, I don't think you just go back to that like next month, for instance.
But just as like this sort of constant presence that's on TV that can get a promo like this on every single edition of the show, I think she's just so valuable, you know, for the company to build everybody else around.
And you need these segments to always like break up a show, like where it's just this person talking and that's a big deal. Like, that's a segment like you want to see, like a Toni Storm talking segment. Like,
yeah, and even like she just again makes it all look so effortlessly, even in like her press conference, you know, which I know is a contentious thing, you know, like somebody playing as much of a character like this, but I guess I've come to really appreciate just these sort of performances no matter the setting. Even in the press conference, she was fucking hilarious after All In. What did you think about Athena and Billy Starks? Like, how do you think this feud, whenever we get to it, will play out?
So it was interesting. Like, when I watched the MJF one, it feels like more of like kind of a long-term play. And I could be misreading that with Hangman. This one just to me felt like it's more probably sooner than later. It's kind of how I felt like it. I mean, it was fine. Like, I really do get the sense like, you know, these two are now going to be staples on AEW moving forward, which is good. Like, it's time for Athena to be featured on AEW. It's a fresh opponent for Toni Storm, and you can build this up to be like a big match in and of itself. Like, this, if anything, I just don't feel they've really benefited from this long title reign of Athena on the AEW side of things. Like, she is this big dominant monster in ROH, and I don't know if they've properly
well so is
that.
Blake Christian, John, okay,
you know, they're both on big streaks in ROH, but like, by the time Toni Storm faces her, like, they should make this as this like this massive challenge for Toni Storm.
Yeah, like, obviously, like, I think everybody who's watching AEW knows Athena, knows that she's like this, you know, very dominant ROH champion, and just listen to the reaction she received, you know, upon winning the gauntlet. But they are in a mode where I think they have to do still quite a bit of work to reintroduce the audience to Athena and why she's so great. And that'll come, obviously. You just put her in the ring and like, that's enough to really show everybody. But the character sort of like dynamic between the two, it's harder for me to picture yet. So I'm very curious to see whenever they get to this feud, how they play it.
And then we had an amazing promo segment with Timeless Toni Storm. And then we go to the back with the remnants of the patriarchy, Nick Wayne, Mother Wayne, and Kip Sabian. Kip starts off by explaining that he took bullet after bullet for Christian and learned what their true purpose was of just being Christian's lackeys. Mother Wayne says, "Christian, I understand you had a hard time getting up by yourself on Saturday. Wouldn't be the first time." And she says, "These are my boys."
Thank you for recapping these shows, Sean. I mean, really appreciate
there's a lot. "These are my boys, and this is our prodigy." And then Nick was instructed to take this one home. He says, "Christian Cage has passed his expiration date. He became a liability, and I realized this when he stopped following our plans and tried to become AEW champion." And says, quote, "The question isn't how many world champions have I won. It's how many world champions I'm going to win." So
he said champions twice?
He said it twice, which I think this is really cool because we have so many belts in this company, but there's very few people that are ever won and lost. And Nick Wayne is going after people. Wow. Okay. He doesn't want to win belts. He wants to win you own you.
We own people. Okay. Interesting.
He says, "Christian, you created this monster. I'm the new face of TNT and the new face of AEW," said on TBS. Listen, Nick Wayne is far from a polished promo, maybe the furthest thing from it. He should be doing pre-tapes, but part of that is so that they can say, "All right, from the top." I thought this was like a pretty poor follow-up promo. What was a big angle on Saturday with these three?
Well, I wonder if they did say from the top, maybe this might have been like the best out of the takes. I wonder. Like two flubs there, but honestly, I think the flubs were relatively minor. Okay, and like saying TNT, does that make sense in any sort of world? Like he means
he's going to be exclusive on Collision.
Well, maybe he wants to go for the TNT Championship. Okay, he starts with beating Christian, then he's going to go after Dustin Rhodes.
He's going to win Dustin Rhodes. And then he's going to defend Dustin.
I think there's a lot of benefit to be taken from this segment more so than like the two minor little negatives, in my opinion. I'm happy to see this group stay together, and I'm happy to see it centered now entirely around Nick Wayne. And I'm happy to see like each person now kind of has like a very defined role in this. When I feel like in the past, well, what the hell was Kip Sabian to this group? You know, like Lucha, like whatever. Like they weren't even like all that well defined. Now I think we have some definition about what's going on here. We've got the matriarch. Okay. By the way, are they called the matriarchy now?
Oh, it's a good question. Yeah.
I mean, whatever. I think, you know, giving her a chance to speak, we now know, I think, what she's after. She wants her son to be just the best, right? And we have Kip Sabian now, who for the longest time I didn't know what his role was in the patriarchy, but now I see him as like the less talented but wiser older brother who wants to live off of the hard work of his more talented younger brother. And I think that's a great role for Kip Sabian.
He's Johnny Chase from Entourage.
Sure. Yeah, I never watched it, but yeah, exactly. Sure. And I think it's a great role for Sabian. You know, he's a much more polished talker. Maybe probably the most polished talker of the group here. And this means a bigger role on television for him, which I think is great. And obviously, it's a chance for Nick Wayne, the young prince, to, you know, just get his acting chops up there and to get these sort of reps. And I think he had to talk a lot here. And again, aside from those little flubs, I thought he actually did pretty well. So this is just like, consider this still very, very early in his career. And
that's how I look at it. And I hope a year from now we'll replay this and
yeah,
we'll look at, wow, this was awful at the time. We'll
sure
see.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then we had a very divisive entrance. Don Callis comes out. He's carrying the Continental and International Championships to introduce Kazuchika Okada, who is not coming alone. He has got his Unified Championship and his brand new theme music. And faster than everyone could start tweeting Tony Khan to turn it back, this match was over in 63 seconds as he beat independent wrestler Rafael Quintero with a dropkick and Rainmaker. Listen, you cannot replace Kazuchika Okada's theme, but I have the feeling they're not going to change this one back. That's going to be my thought.
You cannot replace his theme, meaning like, okay, yeah. No, at this point, it's like his theme is so identified with him that I truly feel like any change would have elicited a similar reaction.
The problem is you've created this precedent now with Mina Shirakawa where you've switched it back immediately. So anytime something is different, people hate it. So now it's going to be like this thing because the last time Tony reversed course, and I think he's got to hold to his guns on this one.
Why do you think so? Why do you think he has to?
Because it's almost like we can't ever change anyone's theme at this point because
the audience will tell you if it's a good enough theme to change to, wouldn't they? In the case of this, and maybe even with Shirakawa, I have to imagine like maybe what it comes down to is just like how much you're paying to use these songs every single time versus something that maybe you own and don't have to pay a fee to every single time. But Tony is happy to spend money on music if he thinks it'll improve the quality of the show.
What if he licenses Meredith Brooks for Okada to come out to?
I think that would the audience would be happy with that.
Yeah. Okay. That's the compromise. Okay. Yeah. We're moving on from his old theme, but we'll spring for some 1998 one hit wonder.
Listen, like music, I think often requires maybe like the best music, I would say, often requires multiple listens for you to appreciate. I don't know if I need multiple listens of this one.
I didn't know where you were going.
I did not think this was good.
I'm not the right person for this because like I don't have such an ear that I'm going to be so bothered by a theme song unless it's absolutely dreadful. But I saw enough negativity about this that I've certainly seen.
I think it has to be drastically different enough so that you're not even like it feels a lot more deliberate and doesn't even sound like what the old song was. This kind of felt like it was like an inspired by, you know, his original theme with lyrics attached to it. And I think I heard a Japanese rap in there in the middle as well. Tonally, I don't really think it fits well, but we'll see how they handle it. Yeah.
After the match, Okada gets on the mic and he calls out Swerve for screwing his friends, the Young Bucks. You bitch. So Swerve comes out in a wonderful sparkling suit and says, "Yeah, I did do that. What are you going to do, bitch?" And then Callis holds back Okada, and that was our segment. So, I mean, we are going towards a Swerve Okada program.
Mm-hmm.
Our first unified title program.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean...
Do you think these three belts are going to remain, or are they just going to retire the old two?
I fucking hope not. I thought the whole point of this was to like make it less
belts.
Confusing. Instead, we just ended up with one extra belt.
We just had Callis walk out with the two, and then Okada's got the third.
Yeah, I just don't think it's necessary. Maybe for the first few weeks, like, okay, you want to establish that this is a unified champion. What is he unifying? These two belts, right? He looked how impressive he looked. But maybe after a month, I think we're okay. Like, I'm fine with it, Tony. You know, like, we're, you know, let's simplify things. Especially if, like, the intent is to make this one belt feel like it's somewhere on an equal level of your world championship. I think it's just a... You don't need that. But having Swerve go after it, I think, is a great first move. You know, especially if you want... Okay, if Swerve's not going after number one, he should be going after what they're trying to make 1B in the
They need to make this unified title feel like it is, like, just below the world title.
Mm-hmm.
It's G1 Climax season, and that means the Post Wrestling Cafe has you covered with podcasts covering every single tournament match. Plus, Rewind Away goes back to review the best of the WWF Volume 16. We'll also have reviews of UFC 318, TNA Slammiversary, a special Ask Away edition, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free with the news of the week and your feedback. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. So we actually got quite a lot announced for Collision that will be back airing on Saturday this weekend. We have got Ricochet against AR Fox, Bandido, Jetspeed, and Máscara Dorada against Lance Archer, Hechicero, Josh Alexander, and Rocky Romero, Roosh against Katsuyori Shibata, Megan Bain against Ty Mello, Alex Windsor against Taya Valkyrie, and Dustin Rhodes will arrive as TNT champion. And they're kind of building the Dustin Rhodes segment as like the main event of the show.
Out of all those things, it kind of does.
They pushed that the hardest, for sure.
Yeah.
And then next week, we have Tony Storm and Billy Starks, and that was the only thing announced for next Wednesday. Main event trios, Hangman Page, Mark Briscoe, and Powerhouse Hobbs against John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta. Moxley is bandaged up from the fork stabbing. Did you have the pleasure of seeing the slow motion video that AEW posted of the fork?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, dude, they posted this video and it's in like super slow motion. And he hits him with the fork and there is blood that just squirts out of his forehead at just, oh my God, it was, I couldn't believe, you know, in another era, X would have flagged this, but I mean, now it's like, hey,
So we know that there's no way to work something like that. It
squirted out like you had a water gun from his forehead with the blood. Well worth your search.
Okay, thank you.
So Moxley stays on the apron for a while, finally enters, yanking Hobbs from behind, then would send Hobbs into the steps. Moxley and Briscoe get tagged in, and Shafir is getting involved with Briscoe. It leads to a paradigm shift on the floor. The crowd is chanting for Darby at one point. Shafir got involved biting Briscoe and gouging the eyes. We went through two commercial breaks, and then it leads to a big hot tag to Hangman, and that seemed to be the person that the whole crowd wanted to see. Like, it was a fine match, but like, this crowd just wanted to see Hangman get in there. And he hits the Orihara to the floor. Moxley would stop a buckshot by biting Hangman. Hobbs delivers the spinebuster. There's a Busaiku knee by Yuta onto Hobbs, and then a froggy bow on Yuta. Claudio ducks a buckshot, goes to the neutralizer, and it's Hangman countering with the jackknife cover, pinning Claudio in 17 minutes and 41 seconds. After, the Death Riders would jump Page. They're beating him down. The lights dim, and then there at the top of the building in a spotlight, it's Darby! And he's there watching from afar, and Page ends up fighting back with the babyfaces clearing the ring, and that is how things end.
Mm-hmm. Good match. You know, I think a lot of credit to all these guys for, well, especially like Mox and Page for having the match and being stabbed the way that they were, and then just coming back, doing the travel, getting to this town and wrestling the match here tonight. If it was selling for Mox and Page, I thought the selling was really great from the both of them here, showing off their injuries, but probably a lot of it might have not been selling as well. You know, what I found interesting about the match was Excalibur kept hinting, or at least like kept bringing up the idea that Mox was being more gun-shy now that he's lost the championship and he was being more timid. Do you think that was actually what they were trying to tell?
So the spot that it did convey that to me was when Hangman gets the hot tag, Moxley gets off the apron and goes and sits against the barricade, like getting away from the action. And I thought, like, are they just going to keep him away from Hangman in the match? But they did. He did get involved further when he got involved there. But I think they're going to, it did feel like they are going to kind of do this story maybe of like Moxley, the bully finally got his comeuppance, and it's like the announcers even said, do you think it's shaken his spirit? And they were openly discussing that.
The other spot that might have spelled that to me was when he came in earlier in the match to interfere by grabbing Hobbs' hair, and Mox started to cower away from Hobbs, which I don't typically see John Moxley ever do for anybody, right? So I wonder if they were trying to tell that, I would at the very least say it wasn't entirely consistent here, or at least not clear enough to really make a point. It could also be maybe a gradual, you know, subtle sort of like he's losing his sort of edge type of a story. But it remains to be seen if it was just the commentator, like Excalibur, just bring something up on his own, or if it was actually a storyline plot point. So what do you think is the direction coming off of this for Moxley and Page?
I do feel like Moxley and Darby is a loose end you have to go to. And I think that's a good program for Moxley to go to post title. I also feel like you could potentially get one more match out of Moxley and Hangman at some point.
Okay. At some point, agreed. But yeah. I think it needs to be built up to just do a rematch. Like, it feels like it would be expected sort of result of just the Hangman Page winning.
I was surprised that they put these two in the ring together after All In. That's mainly the reason I thought that afterward, if they are thinking of doing a rematch. But I think Moxley and Darby should be the direction for Moxley, and like that, you know, that was the whole angle to get Darby off TV. So he should be going after, you know, he should be going after all the Death Riders.
Exactly. Yeah. I too was surprised that like Moxley would just appear with the Death Riders here. I thought there would at least be some sort of conflict within the Death Riders to determine whether or not even John Moxley is a fit leader. And maybe that's the story that they're going to tell after the Darby match, presuming Darby beats him. Could that be final nail in the coffin? No pun intended for the Death Riders.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it could, you get to whenever that happens with Darby and Moxley, like you could stretch that out all the way to All Out potentially. And that could
are they doing a show in Northwest, like Portland area again this year?
I'm sure they'll go back there. I don't think there's anything announced for,
I guess
there.
I'm just wondering if like they might save a Darby match for that, but they could do a Darby match against the champion or something like that if they wanted to for that show.
I thought overall, like, this was a good follow-up show. I didn't think this was like a great, great Dynamite, but I thought that they overall, like, you came out of it, you can see some directions here, whether short or long term, like obviously with Tony and Athena, with MJF eyeing the Hangman at some point. Swerve and Okada, it seems like that's happening right away. And then this Darby deal going for the Death Rider. So you got some direction, but naturally it was definitely like a come down after like the big show overall. And we'll see how these crowds hold up, like both like numbers wise and kind of energy over the next 2-3 weeks.
I thought the show provided like a good coda to, you know, all in that it gave you like celebration speeches for Paige and Toni Storm. I did feel like it was missing that spark though, to feel, for instance, as significant as a Raw after Mania, where you're just getting surprise after, well, ideally you're getting big surprises and you're getting like an official announcement of what your next big storyline is coming off of your season finale.
Even like a New Year Dash where, yeah, it's like all these angles were shot to like the season premiere. Like there was some stuff on this show, but like, it wasn't all like you're coming out of this with like, oh my God, like the big angle that's going to define like the next, you know, big cycle for AEW coming off this show.
Yeah. This did not feel like a season premiere type of show.
Really nothing at all hinted regarding Forbidden Door.
Unless you assume like Swerve Okada, you know, that's a big match that could be a Forbidden Door level match.
Yeah. Like I don't think Forbidden Door at this point even needs to be like all inter-promotional matches. Like I think you want to have some like organic programs off your television to feed into the pay-per-view, and you mix it in with some like inter-promotional matches and stuff, but to just go up and down the card.
You think this was the type of show that like, number one, do you think that people would be sampling this particular episode coming off the buzz of All In if they heard some? And do you think this was like enough to make an impression for people to stick around?
I'd say if that was to answer your question, yes. I think that if you came off that show with that momentum, I think it would spur people on to tune into this show. And in terms of like grabbing that viewer, I'd say this was like a B to a B minus, I would say, like in terms of the follow-up to that. You're right. Like this was a show that I could see someone like, maybe not even newer fans you created, but fans you brought back to sample Saturday's show. And if they came away with it really impressed, then yeah, maybe I'm going to tune in and see what's coming up for AEW and if it's going to hold my interest. So they did shoot angles on the show. Like there were like a lot of different directions teased from Copeland and all this other stuff, but you know, it was,
honestly, John, it felt to me like the show made by somebody who was still really exhausted after making everything in the lead up to All In and executing All In as well as.
Well, I mean, last night, I think we had one match announcement for the show. Like all of this stuff came together today, at least in terms of the rollout of announcements and stuff like that. So
good show. Good show. And
it was a good show.
At this point often is because the wrestling is so strong, you know, and the wrestlers are so strong.
All right, we're going to say goodbye on YouTube. We've got feedback to get into, so you can hop on board the Post Wrestling Cafe. The next month is going to be packed for your $6 and how far that will take you. Again, get your G1 contest picks in by midnight on Thursday night Eastern time. Postwrestling.com/G1, free to enter, make all of your picks, and then you can follow along and see how you fare throughout the next half hour. We may be getting former champion Brandon Thurston making his picks by Thursday night.
C-block champion Brandon Thurston and myself. Wow.
Yes. I think I convinced him today to get his picks in. WH Park, signed, sealed, delivered as well. So, okay. I mean, the whole, we're forcing everybody to enter. Mm-hmm. All right. Goodbye, YouTube.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.